Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is Charleston, New Jersey, and I'm back with yet another episode on recreational math. But before I start this episode, we have a public service announcement from the fake Ken Fallon. Hello, everyone. This is the fake Ken Fallon for Hacker Public Radio. If you've got a pastime, a hobby, or a project that's interesting enough that you find yourself spending time on it, or going on about it with your mates over a beer, you should consider recording a few minutes of audio for Hacker Public Radio. Don't worry about adding a bunch of detailed show notes like Charles and LJ, or producing the perfect recording. Just tell us what you're doing so we can learn about it. You can record your piece using your music player, your computer, or your phone, and send it to the admin. Or you could just phone it in to our call-in lines. The main thing is that we want to hear from you on Hacker Public Radio. Your ideas and projects podcasted. Well, thanks, Fake Ken. I'm sure that everyone listening will be eager to record their own show. Hello, and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is Charles in New Jersey, and I'm back with another episode on recreational math. This is actually another one of those follow-up episodes, and I'm calling today's show Doomsday Remainders. At the end of episode 1240 on the Doomsday Rule, I mentioned the mod function, which I used in the sample spreadsheets and resource files for that show. Now, the name mod is short for modulus, which is just a fancy word for the divisor used to look at remainders in integer division. The term's also used in other contexts, so if you want to do a keyword search, you should probably add remainder or integer to the word modulus to get better results. Now, the mod function and integer division go beyond spreadsheets. Most programming languages also have a mod function or an operator that looks like a percent b or a mod b, where mod is the actual word mod, M-O-D, in lowercase letters, because it's useful in programming. Now, you may only use it for simple things like odd-even parity checks, but there are a number of different things you can do in a programming concept with the mod function. As it turns out, and as I discovered as I rushed those files together, there are differences in the behavior of mod operators and functions in different environments, so you have to pay attention, which unfortunately I did not, but I did have a chance to fix them before they went out. Now, it may be confusing that a function that comes from mathematics would work differently in different places. You might think that a math function would have a single, unchanging definition, but that's not really true here. Now, I'm going to explain a couple of the conventions that are used and show that they're not completely arbitrary, and that you can have a difference of opinion on this particular function. When I talk about using a mod operator that finds the remainder you get from dividing, say, 77 by 3, I'm going to use the shorthand form 77 mod 3. That's going to be quicker and less cumbersome. I'm going to mention it a number of times. But before we go on to these differences in implementation, let's talk about the basics of integer division for a minute or so. Now, integer division is a little different from the floating point math you have on your calculators and in your spreadsheets. There are similarities, of course. Both of them have a dividend, call it x, a divisor, d, and some kind of quotient. For instance, we can compute 24 divided by 3 either way, and the quotient is the same in either case. In any case, where you have integers as inputs, and you can afford to just lop off any fractional bits after the decimal point, well, integer and floating point division will produce values that are close enough for you for the quotient. But floating point and integer division are not the same. For one thing, integer division on computers is exact, whereas floating point division, even with answers that look like integers, is always approximate. The two operations are conceptually distinct, so we're not just talking about little differences in how they're computed. Strictly speaking, integer division always gives two answers, the quotient and the remainder. The first example, where we divided 24 by 3, was intended to highlight the common elements between floating point and integer math. The next example is going to emphasize the major difference, namely the remainder. Now, when I divide 77 by 3 using integer division, I would normally say that the quotient is 25 with remainder 2, because 25 times 3, or 75, and 26 times 3, or 78, come as close as possible to 77. Now, 78 is actually closer to the target, so we could have gone the other way. But for the moment, we'll prefer positive remainders. Now, I've selected the number 25 as the quotient by convention to get the kind of remainder that I want. Now, I normally like a remainder that's both non-negative and as small as possible. But there are other perfectly consistent ways to define it that still work and that I'll describe later on. So, integer division always has these two answers. If the dividend, x, can be written as an integer quotient, call it q, times the divisor d, we say that d divides x, because x is equal to q times d. Now, when d defines x, you might be tempted to say there's no remainder. But for both programming and mathematical purposes, it's probably more convenient to say that we have a remainder, but it's equal to zero. Now, there's no law that says we have to track both the quotient and the remainder in every problem, but both of them are always, they're always present by definition. They're always there. In fact, this is such an important property of integer arithmetic that the programming languages Python and Ruby have a built-in function, divmod, that return both the quotient and the remainder as an ordered pair. So, for example, if I call 77 divmod 3, my return value would be 25, 2. It's an ordered pair, where 25 is the quotient and 2 is the remainder. Well, technically, that would be divmod 77, 3, but I can define an operator that does the same thing. Now, what would prompt us to make use of either the quotient or the remainder, but not both? Well, the doomsday rule that we talked about last time makes use of integer division products in three different ways on the way to finding its answer. Now, Conway's doomsday algorithm for finding the day of the week for a given date has a few steps, and each one uses a kind of integer divide. First, we use target year divmod 100 to split the target year into its century and an offset year. The century number is used to get the baseline day of the week, and the century offset is that set of leftover years that go to the next step as the input. So, for example, if the target year is 1944, century number is 19, and the offset year is 44. Now, going back a step, if you listen to episode 1240, you'll recall that the baseline day is found by adding the results of 36,524 mod 7 for each century since the last 400-year cycle began. Now, to understand where that magic number came from, you're going to have to listen to the episode. Okay, now, given the century offset year, we can break the problem down further by using century offset divmod 12 to get the pair of numbers that represent first the completed cycles, which add plus 1 to the offset for each one, and then the cycle offset, which also adds plus 1 for each year into the incomplete cycle. And then we do an additional check on the cycle offset in a next step. Now, that next step is that we need to adjust the count, the total offset, for the number of leap years in the current incomplete 12-year cycle, which is a quotient-only division of the cycle offset, which is those leftover years, by 4 years per leap year. And we can call that cycle offset div 4, where div is the integer divide that keeps only the quotient and throws everything else out. As you can recall, the div would be the first element and the return value for div mod, so div mod and div and mod for the individual operators. It's a consistent way of referring to these things, and people in some contexts do call these operators by those names. Now, the last part's a little messy, and I refer you to the show to follow the process to the end, but it's all based on x mod 7 for quite a few different little values of x. So here we have, in one calculation, we see three different uses of integer division. One, we have the 12-year cycle and century adjustment that use both the quotient and remainder. We've got the leap year count that uses just the quotient, because there are no partial leap years. And then for the final day of the week, and a few other places, the remainder is the answer. So we use remainder-only math, or the mod function. Now, I hadn't planned it this way at the start of this series, emerging series, but we keep pulling layers off the mathematics onion as we're going along here. Remember, the first show had calendar counting, which led to counting objects, and then we went to Doomsday. Then Doomsday led to a discussion of mod, div, and divmod, and to some of the foundations of grade school arithmetic, and how and why we use it the way we do. Now, in this show, I'm going to look mostly at mod, because it's the least familiar of the integer division use cases. I think we've seen the others many times before. I know we can skip the quotient-only case because you can do that with a calculator and just chop off everything after the decimal. Actually, even tracking quotient-remainder pairs is not that new to us because we have done this before. Now, every time we've used split-unit measures, those are just quotient-remainder pairs. So we don't think twice about referring to a marathon course as being 26 miles, 385 yards, or giving the running time for a 1,500-meter race as 4 minutes, 22 seconds. Now, we also use DivMod, more or less successfully, to know when we should start roasting, let's say, an 11-kilo turkey that needs to cook for 33 minutes per kilogram, and then we have to allow for a 90-minute cooldown after cooking before we can carve and serve it. Now, if you botch that calculation, you could have a house full of angry in-laws waiting for their dinner, and probably most of them did not necessarily need a reason to dislike you, so this is a calculation you should learn to get right. I told you this was going to be useful for life. As for the less familiar remainder-only form of integer division, or the mod function, well, we've seen that it's good for finding dates on the calendar, days of the week. It's also good for finding times of day on the clock. Now, we do this whenever we try to interpret Ken's countdown clock for the next HPR community news, which he usually starts up several days in advance with more than 100 hours to go. Given our attendance record lately, maybe we need to do an episode on figuring out what time of day the community news is held, but that's another topic for another time. Now, there are other applications of the mod function that don't involve times or dates, and I guess we can touch on those a little later. For now, let's go back to the scripts and the spreadsheets from the Doomsday show so I can explain a little bit more about how they work. Now, in the spreadsheets and the Python scripts and the functions for BC, the mod operations carried a lot of the freight in making the Doomsday rule algorithm work on your computer. Now, a few minutes ago, I casually mentioned that we choose the properties of our remainders to follow our preferred conventions, and that we happen to like our remainders positive. Now, that word convention was carefully chosen. There are other ways to define a remainder that are perfectly valid and self-consistent. The main differences in practice are in the sign of the remainder for expressions with, say, negative input values. Some implementations follow the sign of the divisor, so, say, x mod minus 7 is always negative, and otherwise we're okay. Now, there are other systems that follow the sign of the number being divided, the dividend, or they set the quotient to make the remainder as small as possible, regardless of the sign, plus or minus. Now, just for good measure, there are some mod operators that just always give a positive result. And there's an argument you could make for each approach, and each one of these should generally work, as long as you know what the assumptions are. I guess the most important thing is to know the assumptions for the version of the mod function or operator that you're going to use. Now, if you've done much programming, you know that you'll eventually want to use someone else's code or some cool libraries to do part of a job, or maybe all of a job. Now, you're going to face the same issues in using their calling convention, which is often called by the hoity-toity name Application Programming Interface, or API. Now, in the end, an API is just a fancy term for a set of conventions and certain underlying assumptions that you need to understand to use that library or program successfully. We might as well learn to follow APIs using simple types like integers before we go on to use APIs that have more complex structures as input-output values, where you have to pack the inputs and unpack the outputs. Integers are very straightforward to use as calling arguments and return values. So let's look at the different systems that we had to use for the sample code in episode 1240. Well, mod in the spreadsheet is a function, because spreadsheets don't usually support infix operators other than basic arithmetic. Now, spreadsheet mod functions follow the sign of the divisor. So the call 67 mod 7 gives you the answer 4. Now, that implies a quotient of 9 with the remainder 4, since 9 times 7 is 63. And when you add 4, you get 67 back. Now, 67 mod minus 7 returns minus 3, which results from a quotient of minus 10 and remainder minus 3, since negative 10 times negative 7 is plus 70. Now, for the doomsday spreadsheet, this is good news, because my formula used an offset function with expected values from 0 to plus 6 to look up the name of the day of the week from the offset value. And here's the dependency. We used the function call mod x plus 7 to compute that offset value, so we can always count on a calculated index that's in the right range. And that's pretty much all there is to say about the spreadsheet form of the mod function. Now, the mod operator, the percent sign in Python, is consistent with the spreadsheet, but it's got a little extra, it had a little extra twist that I wanted to report as well. Nothing to do with mods, or did it? Now, in Python, the mod operator, the A percent sign B, also returns a value with a sign that follows the divisor. So for this reason, I didn't have to worry about whether I passed in a positive or negative x value in the expression x percent 7. Now, those of you who know Python will see that my day of the week functions do their name lookup, the last step, using a Python list object. And that object's set up with Sunday at position 0, Monday at position 1, and so on up to Saturday at position 6. Now, since the Python mod operator returns non-negative values for a positive divisor, I didn't have to worry. But there's a bonus application of mod in Python. And it turns out that Python would return the same value regardless of the sign of the remainder, as long as it's correct. Huh? That's right. Python list objects support negative subscripts, whose behavior follows the operation of xmod minus 7. So the negative complement, if you will, of the positive subscript points to the same day of the week as the positive subscript itself. Yeah. Well, if you don't use Python, you might just want to skip this or fire up a Python interpreter that's probably on your machine and try these things, but I'll explain it. And you can just sort of fast forward through this part if it doesn't make sense. Now, when you're using subscripting on a 7-item Python list, let's call it my list, the first item is located at my list 0. And the last item is, well, where is it? If the sequence starts at 0, then the cocktail party is minus 1, so the 7th element is at position minus 1 plus 7, or my list position 6. So the positive values for the remainder work nicely as an index into my list of day names. Very good. But here's a special bonus. Negative subscripting in a list also works. It uses the convention that the last list item is my list position minus 1. The second to last is my list minus 2, and so on down to my list minus 6. But it will not work for my list minus 7. If that doesn't work, you would get an out-of-bounds error. But that's not really a problem when you're calculating the subscript using mod, whether you have the positive or non-negative or negative answers, because what would have been pointed to by my list minus 7 is already pointed to as my list position 0. Why is that? Well, remember that minus 7 mod minus 7 is equal to 0, almost trivially because the two numbers divide evenly. Minus 7 divided by minus 7 would be 1, with no remainder, with 0 remainder. So I don't have to worry about a mod function mapping me into my list minus 7, so I won't actually be trying to go there, so this kind of code should be solid. It should work. So the minus 7 case, I don't really have to worry about. It'll simplify to my list position 0, and that's the value I wanted anyway. Now, just to beat this to death, let's say I'm running a doomsday calculation whose target date is on a Saturday. Now, our storage convention puts this at my list position 6, the last element. But from what I just finished saying, this location can also be addressed as my list position minus 1. Now, if my call to xmod7 had returned a negative value that corresponds to Saturday, that value would have been minus 1. This makes sense because minus 1 and plus 6 are exactly 7 days apart. Have you thought about it? Minus 1 plus 1 is 0, plus 6 is plus 6. So we've counted off 7 units from minus 1 to plus 6. I hope you've convinced yourself of that. Not draw a number line and actually trace it with your finger or with a pencil, and it'll make sense. Now, either value should legitimately point to Saturday, and in a Python list, this actually worked. So, in the end, Python was pretty easy. Now for the mod operator in the BC program. Well, I put in BC as a last-minute thing. I did it in honor of Dan Washko's Linux in the Shell episode 25, which covered BC, and that episode aired right about the time I was about to post my show. So, like a dummy, I decided to port my Python day of the week functions to use in BC at the last second. And when I tested them, I noticed that for some dates, my functions got the correct answer, but they failed on other ones, and I knew something was wrong. It turned out there were a couple of things going on in my original functions. Now, there were two issues I overlooked in what I call my naive port from Python to BC, when I thought everything would work the same between the two environments. In BC, the sign of the mod operator, I'll call it X mod 7, or X percent 7 in the code, follows X. So I found out that when my reference dates, and you'll have to listen to the Doomsday episode to find out what those are, but when the reference dates were earlier than the targets, X became negative in the expression X mod 7, and by the convention in an array in BC, this was wrong. Now, this didn't come up in Python, which is too bad because Python could have handled it. Now, here's the second thing. I originally saved the days of the week, the names of those days, in an array in BC, but I couldn't get those shown in the display because BC wanted to return a number. So I made a last-minute change to show the day of the week the name of that day as a side effect of the function, and my return value would be the offset I used to look that up. And the way I implemented the mapping from the offset to the day of the week was through a compound if statement. I checked if x mod 7 is less than or equal to 0, call it Sunday, and so on, up to if x mod 7 is equal to 6, and then call it Saturday. So when I got negative values coming in, it went through that incorrect logic on the first branch and always gave me the answer Sunday, which was wrong about 6 out of 7 times in a row in the places where I was getting the negative values, which was typically early in the year. Okay, now if you look carefully at the two day of the week functions that I included for BC, you'll see that I solved this negative x problem by just adding some magic numbers to the original value of x in the x mod 7 operations. Now, those magic numbers are all multiples of 7, which is okay, but their values may seem a little bit arbitrary when you first look at it. I added a multiple of 7 to x to get a nice positive remainder without changing the answer. Since I only had a short time to make my fixes, I chose values that had an excellent chance to succeed. Arbitrary? Yes, but not completely arbitrary. Now, here's an insight. There's a better way to have done it, and I guess I've figured out that some of you would probably have found it by now. I found it, and I'm about to tell you about it. Now, I wish I could say I had an ulterior motive in using these magic numbers in the X mod 7 expressions, so I could claim that I was trying to bait you into giving me feedback with your better solutions to the problem, or find out whether there was anybody who saw through those algorithms and got it. But the honest reason is that I was on deadline and I stuck in numbers that would get the job done. Now here's a question. Is there anything I could have done to make those adjustments simpler, easier for later readers to understand, and more robust all at the same time? Here's a spoiler alert. Stop the podcast right now if you want to figure that out for yourself. I'll wait. Okay, you're back. Well, that was easy, right? Once you start to play around with the functions a little bit, you start to see how you could make this fix. I'll go through it in probably more nauseating detail than you'll want to hear. That's what the fast forward button is for. Now suppose we assign the answer to x mod 7 to the name y. Now there are two possible cases for the value of y. A is the easy case. Y is non-negative, so it's equal to 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6. And everything works. B is the needs help case, where y is not positive, which is minus 6, minus 5, so on down to minus 1 or 0. And my original table lookup code for the final answer always returned Sunday. Now you may ask yourself, what could I do to Y to make it work? Well, here's a trial balloon. Suppose we add 7 to Y whenever it's negative. That would fix things for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And since it was 0 on Sunday, it wasn't negative, and we're good. Well, the first problem with this approach is it introduces an extra value check to see whether Y is negative, and that's kind of a nuisance. But that's kind of an aesthetic objection. The second problem with the add 7 when Y is less than 0 fix is that you can screw it up if you try to move that check for negative values upstream by checking for a negative X in the first place. Now, if you try to anticipate a negative Y by checking X, and then adding 7 when X is negative, you've got a problem, because you've just broken Sunday, which is at position 0 in my setup, so adding plus 7 to 0 takes you out of bounds. Now, the add 7 adjustment is almost right, but there's an even better way to do it, and that's to add one more step. You get a better result that works for all X's without checking if you just always add 7 and then use Y plus 7 mod 7 as your subscript. Now, if Y is negative, adding plus 7 shifts its value into the range 1 to 7, which are all positive. So Y plus 7 mod 7 always gives the right answer, and the right range is 0 to plus 6. The numbers 1 to 6 don't move. The plus 7 goes back to 0, and you're all good. Now, the added benefit of this adjustment is it doesn't screw up the answers when X is positive. When X is positive, the expression X mod 7 gives you a Y value in the range 0 to 6. Adding plus 7 gives you an adjusted value from 7 to 13, and then Y plus 7 mod 7 moves the answer back into the range 0 to 6 and in the right places once again. So the adjustment is simple, involves no checking in the program code, and there are no magic numbers to conjure up or have to test or worry about. Now, that should help you to understand and use the spreadsheets and the little code snippets that I gave you with the Doomsday episode and understand why they are a little bit different in some places in different environments. Now, I'm going to close with a couple of additional programming applications of the mod operation that might help you if you have programs that you're writing that do things a lot of times and you want to handle different cases. Now, the first pattern is the every 1,000th record pattern. Now, if you do programming that has long processes that take a lot of steps, you may want to stop every few records to send a status message or make a log entry, but you don't necessarily want to fill your disk with log messages every single step. So let's say you have a loop counter n, you could stop every 1,000 records with a simple line of code. Say that your status message or log entry is done with a function called show underscore status. So your code would be, in the middle of your loop, if n mod 1,000 is equal to 0, so if I've got a multiple of 1,000, then show status, and maybe include n if you want to report where you are, and some other arguments, and that will make your log entry every 1,000 records. Now, if your loop starts with 0, it might put out a log entry immediately, but you can adjust for that. And then there's a kind of a common pattern I run into. It's called the every other record pattern. I frequently run into situations that lead to what I'll call even-odd processing, where you have to switch between two handlers at every other record in the file, or maybe in an event in a simulation. Let's suppose you have some kind of a thing that can change states from on and off at each step. I mean, even printed books have left and right hand page formats that are different in a way that helps readers, but it makes things a little trickier for the typesetter and printer. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Now, when you need to distinguish between even and odd parity, the mod function handles that very naturally. After all, if n is even, then n mod 2 would be 0, and vice versa. And likewise, if n is odd, then n mod 2 is 1. Now, with a divisor of 2, life is simple. There's only two possible outcomes. Now, I can shuttle back and forth in a read loop with index n pretty easily using the mod function or mod operator. If I have two functions that I'll call do when odd and do when even that I want to run when n is odd and even, respectively, I can just write the compound if statement. If n mod 2 is equal to 1, then do when odd, else do when even. Done. Pretty simple. Just put in that little snippet of code and I'm able to handle every other record properly. And finally, there's the scene one cycle, scene them all, that you run into where the input data spans several input lines in a predictable way, with the same number of records for each entity that I'm reading. Then I could use mod, or an equivalent, to tell my code to do something each line in that cyclical pattern. Now let's say I have a pattern of 8 items per cycle, and loop variable n, and for the simplicity I had several cases that collapsed into one function call. So first thing I do when I come through my loop is I compute my offset equals n mod 8, because I don't want to keep doing the division every time I have to check the value. And then I go into my if statement. And that's if my offset equals 0, then I'm going to get name. And I call that function, and it will get the name and store it somewhere. And then in my pigeon programming code, I'm going to say else if my offset is greater than 0 but less than 6, then I'm going to call my function, getDetails. And I'll throw in the value of my offset as the first argument, and then maybe some other arguments. And then I'll handle the case where my offset is equal to 6. So that's else if my offset equals 6. And then I'll get city, state, and zip, let's say. Very US-centric, I'm sorry. I could have said postal code and so on, but I was lazy. And then else, let's say I'll get the phone numbers. And that would handle the case where my offset equals 7. And that's all the values that you need to check, because those are the only possible outcomes for an integer being divided by 8 and checking the remainder. Okay, well, there are other applications of integer division and creative uses of the quotients and remainders in programming. I think these examples will be enough to get you started. I think it would be not too long before you'll be creating your own useful examples from your own work, or maybe from hobby projects or play. So I think we can safely leave this topic and move on to the conclusion. And I'm going to talk about some more things, but I think I've given you a lot to chew on. I mean, you could take this discussion of mod and remainders further to talk about nice techniques for factoring big numbers, and I'm talking about either huge numbers or numbers that are big to be playing with in your head, or for working with number bases other than 10, or predicting the form of repeating decimals and that kind of thing. And that exploration would really use the same kind of techniques that our teachers showed us when we were in school, I guess between the ages of 6 and 12, rather than naming US-centric grade numbers or names. But I think we're going to leave this here for now. I think it's been enough for one show. Where are we going next? Well, I think the next thing we're going to do, I'm going to probably leave the recreational math theme behind and look into a couple of listener requests for what I would call practical math topics before I start looking at things that I wanted to look at in terms of math and statistics software. Now, I'll probably procrastinate a little during the summer by recording one or two shows on how I got into computing, partly because HPR needs shows that I can produce quickly, and partly to buy time to figure out how to explain some things in an audio-only podcast format. Well, having said that, if Mr. X can do a comprehensible two-part show on soldering, I think there's hope for this planned Math for the Rest of Us series to work. So that's the end for today, and now it's your turn to record your show for Hacker Public Radio, your ideas and projects podcasted. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.